If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
So, you know, some people read some books and, you know, the author or whoever's giving guidance makes it too simplified. You know, buy on existing cash flow, only buy a certain cap rate or higher. Well, you're going to miss a lot of opportunities if you look at it that way.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Darren Batchelder has a very diverse business background. He's been in the whole loan trading business for the past 16 years, responsible for trading in excess of $4 billion in loan sales. He has worked with Computer Associates and eCredit.com in a sales capacity. He achieved a CPA status with Price Waterhouse and worked within PepsiCo's domestic and international audit divisions. He has a BS in accounting from the University of Rhode Island, has a minority general partnership interest and key principal in 256-unit multifamily community in Dallas, and is also a limited partner on 14 other properties totaling 3,944 multifamily units. Darren, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam, I appreciate having me on.
Man, it's great. It's great. You are in a market that lots of people talk about. Obviously, Texas as a whole gets a lot of attention, but of course, the Dallas market in particular really is somewhere that a lot of people have been focusing. The same questions I ask everybody when they come on: where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Sounds good. So I kind of bounced around a bunch of different industries, but I've had my own business since 2007, trading large loan portfolios between banks, and I still have that business. Focused on residential, multifamily, and commercial real estate loans. About 3 years ago, the business was running efficiently. I had time. I had been wanting to buy real estate for a long time, and I finally just made it a focus. And you know, I started small. My wife and I went and bought a new construction duplex, October of 2017, and you know, that was scary actually doing that first little deal. And I had the capital to do it. It wasn't that. It was just that buying real estate other than my personal residence was something completely new. Once we signed the contract to that, I started to realize, like, look, this is going to take forever to build any real wealth. So how can I go bigger? And I went searching for a way to go bigger. I found a multifamily mentorship group here in the Dallas area, joined that group, met a ton of syndicators that they basically changed my mindset by telling me, hey, Darren, man, you don't have to go duplex, fourplex, eightplex. You could actually go bigger. And so my next deal was a year later. It was a $6 million purchase. It was a 76-unit townhome community in a town called Crowley, about 15, 20 minutes south of Fort Worth. And I partnered with a guy that I met in the multifamily mentorship group. He had a ton of experience. So I kind of leveraged his balance sheet, his experience, his network. And then a year later, I partnered with a couple of guys on a $15 million deal. And then just day before yesterday, we closed on a $30 million A-class deal with a great partnership group in Houston. So, I mean, it's just crazy what you can do if, one, you let your mind believe you can do it, and two, you network and you build relationships with the right people.
Right. And I was going to ask what those keys were that helped you kind of unlock these doors as you've progressed. And it sounds like you just gave those to us. One is let your mind believe you can do it and then find the right partnerships. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, surrounding yourself with like-minded people that have already done what you want to do, you know, whether it's buying real estate or whether it's starting your own company, whatever it is, you know, once you get around people that have done it, it was amazing to me what happened in my own mind. You know, you can't help but size people up too. Like, so, you know, I was like awed by what they had done. They bought, you know, 100 unit, 200 unit, 300 unit complexes. But then I was like, look, these are just people, man. They are just people. They, you know, if they can do it, I can do it, you know? So, and they were nice enough to share with me, you know, how they did it. And I kind of just, you know, mimicked that. you know, I think that for your listeners, for people out there, you know, friends and family, I believe they have good intent, you know, by a lot of times telling you not to do something. You know, they're not doing it to be harmful, but a lot of them aren't educated in what you're trying to do. So they may not be the best person or group to seek advice from. So go find people that have already done what you want to do, and they are going to encourage you to go ahead and take action.
Mm-hmm. No, that's so true. That's so true. Unfortunately, it is those typically, I think, that are closest to us that may have no idea what it is. I mean, even my own, I've been asked this more times by my own siblings, which I come from a huge family, and they're like, so why do you do a podcast again? What's that about? Like,
right.
All right. So we're just not, we don't understand. We're not coming from the same, you know, the same place in life. So yeah, fine.
Or what's the ROI that you use? You launch the podcast and then like a month later, hey, what's the ROI on that?
Right. It's got a minus sign in front of it, Darren. I'll tell you that. And it's got a four handle at least on it, if not a much bigger number. So yeah, especially if you count in time. But I mean, even so, you know, you can't quantify those things. They don't get it. They don't understand the long game and what you're doing. And I think that's what you were talking about, is building that long game, those relationships, those people. Why do you think it is? And I've found this in real estate to be particularly unique in that, unlike other businesses where everyone is competition, and certainly there's competition in real estate. I mean, there's certain things you keep close to the vest because you're like, hey, you know what? This is a deal and I'm just not telling anybody about it until we got a signed PSA and we're further down the road and, you know, hush, hush. But I've also found that in real estate, it's a unique industry in that people are very, very collaborative and want to share, and your success is their success. Why is that?
Yeah, I had the same thought process coming in, and I've been involved with a number of different industries, you know, whether it be in sales, you know, where you're competing with other salespeople, or what business ownership, and you're trying to make your business as successful as possible. So when I got involved, I thought for sure once I joined the group that everybody was going to be tight-lipped because I'd be competition. But what the reality is, you know, a lot of the syndicators that I went to that had a lot of experience, they're like, hey, Darren, man, what are you going after? And I'm like, well, my focus is 60 to 100 units, you know, for my first syndicated deal. They're like, we're not even looking at that. Like, we're going after 100 unit plus or 150 unit plus, or we're going after 200 unit plus deals. So, you know, we're not even competing in the same, you know, market. So for me to share with you and help you, you know, is no skin off my back. And two, if you go out and do all the legwork and then you need an experienced guy to come on to provide guidance, well, you've done all the sweat equity. And then you show it to me and I'm like, yeah, that's a good deal. You've done all the work. And I come in and you put the resume together and then the two of you work together and they get a piece of the deal. They weren't even going to look at the deal anyway. So it's a win-win. Now, you know, as you progress, you know, you may end up competing in that same market and going after same deals. Maybe on your second or third or fourth deal, you're competing with that same person. But there's also the opportunities where, you know, one person lands a deal and they're like, you know what, this is a big deal and it's a big equity raise and I could use a few partners and, you know, I've worked with you on another deal and we worked well together and, you know, why don't you join me? And so that's, I believe, why there's such a collaborative working together type of mentality in the commercial world. I never did the single family fix and flip. I've heard from others that it's pretty cutthroat in that, you know, neck of the woods and people aren't as collaborative. But my experience in the multifamily world, large scale multifamily world, has been amazing. People have been so helpful.
Right. Yeah. And I think you bring up a valid point there that the size of these transactions warrant teamwork.
Yeah, absolutely.
In single family, yeah, I've personally done about 60 fix and flip properties. And I'll say, yeah, that's a fairly cutthroat because it's only one deal. And it's one deal that one person, you know, I could manage, where you're taking down a $30 million asset. There's a lot of hats to wear. And I would imagine that too many hats for you, Darren, to take on by yourself.
Right.
How have you split up your partnerships? Or how have you determined roles on these various assets? Because I'm imagining that the general partnership, kind of some of the seats may be the same, but different faces fill those seats. So how have you split up those and defined who's doing what and done it in such a way without creating conflict or overlap?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So there's what you would call the lead sponsor. So the lead sponsor, it could be an individual. Like I chose to be an individual. There are other people that they find one other guy or two or three other people and they form a company. They form their own LLC and that company goes to be the lead sponsor. But so the lead sponsor goes and finds the deal. Okay. So they're the ones that are out talking to the brokers, going on property tours, underwriting the deal, you know, making sure that the returns will be there for investors, putting in offers. And when they all of a sudden get the deal, you know, they're in best and final or they get awarded the deal, now they're like, all right, we're the lead, but this deal is probably too big for us to do the capital raise on our own. So, hey, let's go ask some other partners to join us. And that's where no like and trust comes in. So people are like, you know, who do I like? Who do I want to do business with? You know, so that's probably the first criteria. And then, all right, what do we need help with? Well, maybe we, you know, it's a large equity raise and we want to have some other general partners in the deal that can bring relationships that we don't have. So, you know, who are their investors? You know, are they pulling from the same bucket that we already have relationships with? Well, then maybe that's an overlap. We want to go to somebody else that has relationships in a completely different area. And then when you have those discussions, the lead sponsor, they have the deal. So they're going to approach another general partner and say, hey, here's what we're looking for. This is the role that we would like you to play. And here's, you know, the percentage of the general partnership willing to offer you for that role. You know, is it a win-win? Does it work for you? And then that general partner will decide, you know what? Yeah, I want in, or no, either I don't want to work with those guys, or I, you know what, the deal doesn't make sense to me, or maybe the compensation isn't strong enough, you know, so it's a negotiation. And then once everybody's on board, then you press forward from there.
What are those basic seats, I guess, that maybe you see being repeatedly filled every time? Is there a way to define that?
Yeah, and some groups carve it up into more pieces than others. You know, from the groups that I've seen, the predominant roles fall into, okay, who's going out and finding the deal and locking up the deal?
Mm-hmm.
Those people typically, it doesn't have to be this way, but that lead sponsor or that lead sponsor group typically is also going to be the asset manager. So when the deal closes, they're also going to be the one that sends out monthly communications and works with the management company to make sure that it's on business plan. But it doesn't have to be. I've seen other groups where they carve that piece up and they're like, you know, you got one guy who finds the deal and then another guy who does the asset management afterwards. But in my world, I've seen most lead sponsors also act as the asset manager afterwards. That lead sponsor will also be responsible for bringing other team members in, selecting who the attorneys are that they're going to use, who they're going to use for financing. Then typically they're going to bring in other partners to help raise capital. Sometimes maybe there's somebody that's got a really strong asset management background and maybe they'll use them for a little bit of that as well. But predominantly I see, you know, as the deals just get bigger and bigger and bigger, they bring in more partners just to help, you know, bring more investors to the table.
Yeah. So you're seeing your acquisitions and asset managers really be the same role.
That's the way I've seen it, but I do know groups that will carve it up in more pieces. I know one group that will carve it up where, because in the beginning there's some, the lead sponsors are fronting all the money until the deal is closed. So they're putting up hard money day one. They're paying for the attorney's fees, the, you know, application for the lender, the inspection fee, the appraisal. So at closing, they get reimbursed for that. But if the deal doesn't close, that's all on them. That's their risk. So I've seen other groups that say, okay, well, hey, I've got a guy who will front all the money. And so, you know, one guy goes out and finds the deal. This other guy will front the money. He'll get a piece of the general partnership for fronting all the money. Then we'll have another guy who raises all the equity. He's really good at raising the equity. Then we'll have another guy who does the asset management afterwards. And then we'll have another guy who's the balance sheet guy, who's got a really strong balance sheet and really strong resume. And, you know, so you can carve it up into a lot of different pieces. It's all what you kind of focus on your strengths and bring in other people to fill in the gaps.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. What do you see? We'll switch gears here a little bit. And I really appreciate you taking the time to break down kind of how you guys have structured that. Cause I think that's a common question is who fills what role, and then how do you determine what that is? So that's really great that you've taken the time to do that. Let's talk a little more high level on the market as a whole. Let's talk cap rates. Let's talk what you see happening in your markets, how things fared through 2020. I mean, can you give us kind of just some general market insights that you have with, you know, obviously your experience there in your local market?
So, you know, with COVID, interest rates did an about face. You know, everybody thought interest rates were going up and up, and instead they turned around and went the other way. So, you know, now we're, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, people were getting financing, say, plus or minus 5%. Mm-hmm. Now people are getting financing plus or minus 3%. So with that, cap rates have also come down and, you know, deals are extremely competitive, you know, in the growth markets. I talk to syndicators all across the country and everyone says it's competitive. But I think it's ultra competitive in the growth markets where population is moving into Texas, Arizona, the Carolinas, Tennessee, Florida. So cap rates is an interesting question because some people that are just getting into space or read a few books or whatever have gotten guidance like only buy for the existing cap rate, the existing cash flow. And, you know, or hey, Darren, what cap rates are you buying at?
Sure.
And, you know, and I've only been in the real estate side for 3 years, but I've been in the loan trading side since like 2002. And I think that that's the wrong question because I can have two deals where one deal, let's just say one deal is a six cap. Okay. And, but you know, the prior ownership group, you know, the property's pristine, like the exterior, great new paint job, looks beautiful. The interiors have been renovated. You know, it's 98% occupied, you know, it's a six cap. Okay. I buy that. There's not much I can do with it. So next year it's probably still a six cap. Okay. Another deal might be a five cap, 4.5 cap, whatever. And I look at it and I'm like, man, the ownership group has owned it for 20, 25 years. They haven't painted the property. I look at rents down the road and, you know, comparable properties are renting for $150, $200 more per month. The interiors haven't been renovated. It's got old signage. You know, they're not doing any marketing. Like, I'm like, holy cow. Yeah, that's a 4.5 or 5 cap. But I look at that and I'm like, I could turn that into a 7, 7.5 cap. So which is the better deal? I think the one that has all that meat on the bone. So, you know, some people read some books and, you know, the author or whoever's giving guidance makes it too simplified, you know, buy on existing cash flow, only buy a certain cap rate or higher. Well, you're going to miss a lot of opportunities if you look at it that way.
Right, right. Yeah, that's absolutely a good point. Darren, let's jump into the final four here.
Sure.
What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Get into real estate as soon as you can. I didn't get into real estate till 47, and I'm blown away by the wealth building opportunities. It's just an investment that has just immense tax efficiency and leverage. So that's what I would say.
Awesome. What's one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I'm always trying to layer something that I'm uncomfortable with, something I haven't done. That, okay, you know, this year on my goals, you know, I'm going to do something that I haven't done before. And it's scary, man. It is. Every time I do it, I'm like, I don't want to do that. And then I look back and I'm like, I'm so glad I did. And, you know, part of it is the prize at the end, you know, whatever that prize is. But really for me, it's the journey, man. It's like figuring it out and getting through that and pushing yourself, even though you're nervous, all that.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
So long time ago, I was convicted at church about tithing, and I started to tithe, which people don't know. It's giving 10% back to the church. And when I did that, you know, a few things happened. One, it made me feel great that I was able to give. Two, more came back to me. Mm. And I wouldn't say give just so you can get, but like right. It just happened that way. And a lot of people have told me that's the way the world works. And then secondly, you know, people talk about giving back, and I just haven't been the type of guy that wants to go rake the leaves of the, you know, the elderly person down the street. But syndication has given me kind of a new energy and passion, because my other business, you know, it's all the profit flows down to myself, my family. But with syndication, like, look, myself and my business partners are, you know, improving the property and growing the valuation of the property, and we are going to benefit. But we have all these limited partners,
right,
that we're helping grow the wealth of all these other families. And on my first syndication deal was a $6 million deal. We had 44 limited partners. So as we exit that deal and we will all make money. And so that to me is exciting, to be able to give back and teach other people how to do it. So help people grow their wealth and teach other people how to do the same thing.
Right, right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. At some point, I'll want to dig in on that 44 number for a $6 million raise. That sounds like a lot of limited partners. So that's fascinating. Hey, last question here is, how do our listeners get in touch with you?
Best way is my website, darrinbatchelder.com, darrinbatchelder.com. I'm on all the major social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. I'm probably on Instagram the most, at Batchelder Darren. And I also launched a podcast about mid-year 2020 called Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. So those are the main ways.
Awesome. Darren, thanks so much for your time and insight. Certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Sam, appreciate having me on.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.